Accession number 19941, Reel 1.
Kenneth Warburton, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Preston, Lancashire.
Which year was this?
1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Preston?
Yes.
Which school did you go to there?
Initially St Andrews from being 5 to just 10, and then Deepdale Modern from 10 to 14, which was a secondary school.
So you left school just as war was breaking out?
Yes, in 1939.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I think I heard a radio programme. I think it was in the afternoon.
Did it make any impact on you at all at your age?
Well, you were proud of your country then. I don't know it had any other impact than that.
What did you do on leaving school?
I first worked for an accountant's for about 6 months, and then I went to Leyland Motors and became an apprentice draftsman.
Did the war affect you in Preston at all?
Not a lot. We used to hear the air raid sirens go from time to time and heard aeroplanes, but Preston, to my knowledge, never got bombed.
Were there many troops or POWs around in Preston at that time?
Yes, we had on Moor Park, which was a park next to Deepdale Modern School where I went to, there was a massive ATS camp, and there were other forces camps in the area, mainly army camps.
What effect did all these troops have on...
And with Latin. Quite a few Americans, when the Americans came in the war as well. But I don't think they had a great effect on us. You saw a lot of them, but apart from that, and the fact that they were taking large areas of my favourite park up, not a great effect.
How were they behaving?
Generally very well. You never saw very much trouble at all.
So how did you come to be in the forces yourself?
Well, my friends were older than me because I went to secondary school 2 years approximately before I should have done. I was just 9 when I sat the plus 11 and 10 when I went to secondary school. I was one of 3 boys at St Andrews who tested it. We all passed, so that let us all go to 3 different schools.
And so you were going to tell me how you applied for the forces?
Well, all my friends were getting called up, and I felt guilty, you know, because I was occupation deferred, which means I would have stayed out until I was 21, which I felt was wrong. So I volunteered initially for the RAF. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, things like young boys do, and found I was partially colourblind on greens and reds and browns. And I should have known that, because when I used to play snooker, I could never tell the brown ball from a red one. The rest of the colours I can see quite clearly, and I've got good sight apart from that. So my next choice was the Royal Marine Sea Service, and they accepted me.
How did you go about joining the Marines?
Well, I volunteered, because you could volunteer at the place for services in Preston, and made it clear that that was what I wanted to join.
On what terms did you join?
Well, they accepted me. I went for a medical, and they found, apart from a hernia which I had, that I was in very good shape, because I did a tremendous lot of running as a youngster. And they took me in, operated on me at Newton Abbott, and then I joined the next squad.
How old had you got a hernia at that age?
I think possibly through doing a tremendous lot of running and climbing. I was always physically very active. My school was 2.5 miles away, and rather than pay a halfpenny bus fare, I used to run it 4 times a day. So from being just 10, I ran 10 miles a day racing a bus. Used to beat me in my early days, but I used to beat it in the end. And of course, you got the fact that the bus was letting people on and off where you were running, and there wasn't the traffic on the roads in them days.
Do you remember the date that you joined Royal Marines?
It was 1943, and I think it was September. And I took up training in November 1943.
What was the next thing that happened after you came out of Newton Abbott?
Well, I went on leave for a week to help me recover. Then I went back to Plymouth and joined the next squad, which was HO314 squad.
Was that
the HO is hostilities only, and then we also had the King squads who were full-time Marines.
Was this for basic training?
Well, yes, for 8 to 9 months training.
What did that involve?
Well, it involved parade drill initially, naval gunnery, assault course training, rifle training, long distance marching with heavy bags on your back on Dartmoor, staying out for days on end, attacking targets which were miles away. We were given a map. And this was the target, and at night you had to find the way there. And we had assault courses, which were some of the most difficult in the world, because I always remember, I think it was American Rangers who came to look at them, thought they could do it, and found they couldn't. They weren't disciplined enough to do the things we had to do. They would have needed training before they started it, and they started it before they had the training to do it. Because you had things like the death slide, which was a rope from a very high cliff right down to the river, and you swung down it. Another one, you held the rope, went over a small ravine full of barbed wire, let go of the rope when you passed the other side, and slid down sand. But you had to let go of the rope exactly the right second.
Otherwise.
And it was a mass of things like that, and between two, like a gorge, which was about 20 foot down, and your stones at the bottom, and you one Marine swinging from one end and one from the other at the same time till they joined the middle, which was sand. And this was what we had as part of our assault course, which went on for 3 weeks.
Were there any serious accidents?
Very rarely, because we were trained to do these things before we did them. Whereas, to say, when the Americans tried it, they weren't trained to do it. They just went and tried to do it, and you cannot do that.
Were you able to cope yourself with what was expected?
Everything. Another thing we had in, you know, for getting fit and all that, before breakfast every morning, all recruits did the Kreml run, which was 1.5 miles to about 2 miles run. The Kreml run, and the Kreml run was started at the back of the barracks, and the Kreml was a sort of beachhead behind Stonehouse. And we used to run this middle distance race, and they were racing against each other, all recruits, so there were at least 600, and every day I won it. Again, this goes back to me doing this at school. I'd done 4 years running at a longer distance than that.
How tall were you in those days?
About 5'9".
And what was your weight?
About 11 stone.
So you were relatively tall and slim?
Yes. Though I wasn't one of the tall ones of the Marines we had, because there was a lot of Marines well over 6 foot. I was about the middle one.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Very well. They were very disciplined. And you had to make sure that everything you were required to do was done. Like, you had to be on parade at 9 o'clock or you would be in trouble. So you were on parade at 9 o'clock.
Were you ever in trouble yourself?
No.
What kind of advice were the Marines giving you, the instructors giving you about your future?
Well, it was training you to do what the Marines were required to do, and when I was due to be demobbed, they wished to keep me, but again, my only intent in joining the Marines was to do it for the war. Once the war was won, then my interest in it was over.
How did the different recruits get on with each other?
Very well, generally. You used to get a little bit of bullying, because a number of recruits were weeded out partway through the training as not being good enough for the requirements of the Royal Marines Sea Service, and they were then sent out to the Commandos, Land Marines and other people like that. So there was that which caused a little bit of friction, but that apart, because people didn't want to be one of them that didn't make it. And you always got that little bit of bullying, and they used to sort of pick on that kind of people.
What kind of person?
Well, the one that wasn't going to make it, or they thought wasn't going to make it. Sometimes they wish they hadn't, but...
Sometimes they wish they hadn't what?
Picked on people like that, because I had a friend who came from Manchester named Oppo Swift, and he said he got bullied, and he said that he would sort them out if he failed to make the grade, and he failed to make it, and he did sort them out. Now, I found out after that his brother was Carl Van Werden, who was one of the best wrestlers in the country. So these people do make mistakes.
How did he sort them out?
Well, beat them up. He never attempted to do anything of all the time they picked on him, and he could have done that at any time. But he didn't wish to get in a bad reputation, so...
So why was he called Oppo?
I don't know, just his nickname. I never found that.
Any incidents that happened during this period of training that you recollect?
Not really. Nothing that... I can really remember, except that when we were doing the assault courses, we were given targets about 10 miles a day in bad weather in midwinter, and I was then a section commander, and I was the one who managed to find the target which we were supposed to attack. The others failed, and that was something that stood out to me. Perhaps I was lucky. I've always had a good sense of direction.
Was this a happy or an unhappy period for you?
Very happy. I enjoyed it. I like outdoors life.
So we're talking about the larger part of 1944, are we?
No, I finished training in July 1944. So we were under training from the beginning of November 43 to July 1944, which was a long time for wartime training.
Did you experience any bombing by the enemy in this period?
Yes, one night Stonehouse Barracks had a few incendiary bombs dropped on it. One dropped on the sergeant's mess, and a big cheer went up from all the Marines. I thought, where else in the world would that ever happen? We used to get bombed, but not a lot. Plymouth had about 3 air raids on it while we were there, and of course probably were looking for bombing the harbour and shipping in there.
Was the sergeant's mess burnt down?
No, it wasn't badly burned, but it did set it afire. Yeah. It was soon put out though, because it was just only an incendiary bomb. I thought, well, where else in the world would that ever happen? You know, a cheer go up.
What happened to you after this period of training?
Well, the first assignment I had was the Quebec Conference, That occurred just after I'd, you know, went on a fortnight's leave having completed training, and having come back, the message got through that we were required to provide this service. And I was one of them selected, possibly on the fact that I was one of the top marksmen, to be part of the team that was to provide the escort and everything else that was required.
How big was this escort team?
I would think it was about between 30 and 40, all told.
Did you know them?
Oh yes, they were all Royal Marine Plymouth Division.
And who was in charge of the team?
I'm not sure now. It was probably Major Buckley, but I'm not too sure on that.
Can you take me through, step by step, what happened to you with the Quebec conference, please?
Well, what we did was first report to the officers of the War Cabinet, so we travelled up to London, stayed at the Union Jack Club, picked up all the things we required, and the people joined us. We went then from Great Peter Street, as I recall it, which was the back way into the offices of the War Cabinet, to, I believe it was West Kensington Station, then on to the mainline station, then by train to Scotland, where we picked the Queen Mary up on the River Forth, I think it was, wasn't it?
River Clyde.
No. River Clyde, sorry, the River Clyde, River Forth, another one. River Clyde, and then we went out on the Queen Mary with an escort of cruisers and destroyers. But after an hour or so, the Queen Mary left them behind and then set sail across the Atlantic. We were on duty there on the conference and map room. And in the conference room, they had this map which mapped the U-boats out, which were ahead of the Queen Mary, because it had no escort. It did it by sheer speed. And all it did was sail around them. And it took 5 days to go to Halifax, Nova Scotia.
What were conditions like for you and the team in the Queen Mary?
Quite reasonable, because going from Scotland to Canada, there wasn't a lot of people on board. Coming back was different. Because there was no sort of holiday makers in them days, and no great number of forces going from England to America. It was quite a comfortable journey over. And we landed at Halifax, Nova Scotia, then caught a train, and the trains in them days were marvellous. And we arrived at Halifax in the morning, and at night we got to a town or city called Moncton. And this was the first time since 1939 we'd seen lights on in a city. And then it stopped in Moncton for about an hour, and then we carried on to Quebec. And we were then quartered, having taken, you know, the baggage and escorted our entourage to the Chateau Frontenac. We were then quartered in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Barracks at the Citadel.
What were the quarters like?
Quite good, because they were those used by the Mounted Police.
And then what?
Well, we did our duty, but we didn't do it in... There may have been odd members of the team do it inside where the conference was held, which was the Chateau Frontenac, and this was between President Roosevelt and the Prime Minister of Canada, Mackenzie King, and Winston Churchill and their entourages. Personally, I didn't go in the Chateau, but we provided escort when they came out of the Chateau anywhere. But the senior members of the team, bear in mind that I'd only just passed for duty. But there was known to be more conferences coming up, of which I would then become a more experienced member, so I was one of the sort of junior members of the team.
What did you see of the VIPs?
Well, you saw people, and but again, the main doing the exercise was done by the senior Marines with the FBI and the Canadian Mounted Police, who were on duty in the chateau itself, and we provided the external requirements.
Any incidents that happened to you?
None there at all. We had to give a military display once on Dufferin Terrace, which is a, because there was about, say, 40, probably 40 Marines there, between 30 and 40, and we gave an half-hour's display there without orders, which is one of the things we're trained to do. And Chateau Frontenac overlooks Dufferin Terrace. And we were given also one, we might say, one day's holiday when we were off duty there, and taken to Laurentides National Park, which is a gigantic lake surrounded by mountains with a beautiful totem lodge there, and all the canoes to go on the lake and all this sort of thing. But that was the only day that we got taken around there.
Which month was this?
Trying to think now. I think it was about September of 1944.
Did you have much contact with the Canadians themselves?
Not a lot. You never did when you worked with them. You were on duty with them, different people. But you never, having done the duty with them, then you went back to whatever your people were. You never went anywhere with them.
What did the attitude of local people seem to be?
Well, they were French Canadians, and they weren't particularly friendly to English people, but I'm talking now generally. Some who were, and some who were obviously very conscious that they were French and you were English. I suppose anywhere else in Canada you'd have been, you know, rather different. It's just the same as South Africa, it's the same sort of thing.
Were you happy to be there?
Yes, very happy, because it was a lovely place at that time of the year. I don't know if it would have been happy in winter time, but it was lovely in summer time, or the end of summer. And when the conference was over, then we travelled by train again, this time down to New York, where we picked the Queen Mary up again. But this time the Queen Mary was absolutely packed with American troops. So we were on duty a little more in times of, you know, where one person was on duty initially on the way over, you were in twos coming back because of the people on board the ship.
What did the duty involve?
Well, it was largely checking who went in and out of the conference room, because all the meetings were held in the conference room, which was a big room on board the Queen Mary where SAO had all the meetings carried out, and we were on guard outside the doors, checking that no one got in there without having the right to go in. And one time, one night, I was on duty, and this was about midnight, on my own, outside the door, because it was done 24 hours a day, and Winston Churchill came along. And he came along to look at notes which were in the conference room. So there's no way you could ever go to sleep on duty. You had to be alert.
Did you ask him for a pass?
Oh, no, no. Of course you knew them. And I was then brought up to be very much Labour, because Preston was like that. But my work with him and his dedication to his duty was such that he changed me from being Labour to Conservative. And I don't think there's been another Prime Minister like him, and I don't think there will be.
How did he treat the General Staff?
Very well. Because I always remember on the Quebec conference, we had a number of non-commissioned officers with us. I was then just Royal Marine, and they were given one of his cigars each.
Was this a butt or the whole cigar?
The whole cigar.
How strictly did you enforce the security regulations?
Well, you made sure that nobody ever went there it wasn't supposed to do, but again, I mean, I imagine people knew that we were on duty there, and anybody who might have done, it could have been a crew member or something like that, that made never and ever made an attempt to my knowledge, certainly not when I was on duty.
How were the American troops on board behaving?
Very well. When we came back, very well. Again, I suppose it to them it was a time of stress in a way. Probably behaved a lot better coming over from America to England than what they may have done doing the opposite way. I don't know.
What happened next?
Well, we sailed from New York. Again, it was a 5-day trip to Scotland again, and then down by train back to the offices of the War Cabinet, and then having then, you know, got all the baggage, everything like that there, then the and the people back again. Our task was finished, and we went back to barracks at Plymouth. I think we stayed in Union Jack Club again the day we arrived back. I'm sure its name was the Union Jack Club, because sometimes you used to call it the Waterloo Club, which I think was its common name, because it was at Waterloo.
And then?
Then I was posted to HMS Rodney, so it was back up to Scotland, this time to the Firth, where I joined the Rodney at Rosyth. It had just come back from bombarding France, and we picked it up there. And we went to Scarpa Flow and did exercises around that area. But it never, to my knowledge, or it certainly didn't while I was aboard, go into action again. Because we were at Scarpa Flow until look on there.